He turned away from her and stepped into the chamber of the dead. The utter cold cut into him like a knife, and he shuddered so hard his teeth chattered in his head. The frozen air burned in his throat and lungs. It felt like swallowing razor blades. Hoarfrost formed immediately on his hair and eyelids, and his eyes ached as the cold began penetrating the liquid in his eyeballs. He blinked hard, gritted his teeth, and knelt down to fit himself into the tunnel he'd made. Even with his disruptor set on full wide dispersal, it hadn't been able to produce a very large tunnel. He'd have to crawl through it on all fours. His knees jarred on the frozen bodies, hard as concrete. Some of the bodies had been cut open by the energy beam as neatly as if by a surgeon's knife, revealing their innards. They were mostly gray, with a few pale shades of pink or purple. Even the vitality of color leached out of them by the dreadful cold. Owen shuffled forward and reached out with his hands to grab the bodies ahead and pull himself along. The dead, icy flesh burned his bare hands, like grasping a log from the heart of a fire. Every instinct yelled at him to let go immediately, but he refused to listen. He tightened his grip and pulled himself on. As he took his hands away to reach further along the tunnel, his warm flesh clung stickily to the cold, and he had to use all his strength to pull free. He left patches of skin behind, but felt no pain. Owen refused to let it upset him. The skin would grow back, and it would happen less and less as his hands cooled. Already his body was adapting to its surroundings, his core temperature plummeting at a speed that would have killed anyone else. He had no sensation left anywhere, and his eyes were stuck open, but he'd stopped shuddering. When he moved his arms and legs, they felt like they belonged to someone else. His breath no longer steamed on the air before him. He pulled himself on, further into the domain of the dead, and his hands felt nothing, nothing at all. The dark closed slowly in around him. He could hear Hazel moving close behind, breathing harshly, and she was his only comfort in that dark place. The tunnel ran out sooner than he thought it would. The sheer number of packed bodies had absorbed much of the energy beam's impact. He grabbed at the bodies before him, pulling them apart and away from each other, opening up a path. Often, limbs stuck out like barriers in his way, and he had to tug and pull at them with all his inhuman strength, breaking them off and thrusting them aside, out of the way. The arms and legs snapped cleanly, like pieces of wood. He tried to think of them that way, but couldn't. They were people, his people. The thought tormented him. But the anger at what had been done to them helped him with the horror of where he was and what he was doing. Sometimes he had to smash in rib cages with his more than human strength to make the necessary room. The unmoving bodies were stubbornly resistant, and he came to resent them. Didn't they know that what he was doing was for their sakes? He lashed out with his fists, and was glad his hands were numb, for more than one reason. He could feel Hazel's presence, hear the ragged sounds of her slow progress, but when he croaked her name,
Hazel,
she didn't answer him. Presumably her voice was as wrecked by the cold as his. Either way, he couldn't turn around to see if anything was wrong. There wasn't room. So he pressed on, heading for the door he could see clearly in his mind. It was very dark now. The last of the light from the main cavern and the re-erected force field had long since died away. There were shifting and creaking sounds all around him as the bodies redistributed their weight in response to Owen's actions. It was almost as though the dead were stirring in their cold sleep, disturbed by the presence of the living in their midst. He fought on, his heart hammering in his chest, his breathing harsh, half convinced that at any moment a dead hand would reach out of the darkness and clamped down on his arm or leg. Claustrophobia began to enfold him, as all the bodies stacked above him seemed to press down with increasing weight. He began to doubt the surety in his mind of the location of the hidden door. He had no way of telling one direction from another in the utter dark. He could be moving in a slow circle for all he knew, hopelessly lost in the kingdom of the dead. He began to feel he'd been moving for far too long without getting anywhere, that he should have reached the door long before this, that he'd be trapped in here forever, in his own private hell. But he wasn't alone. Hazel was here with him. And just knowing that gave him the strength to go on. Finally, he reached the other side, and his hand slammed up against flat metal. His thoughts had been slowed by the cold, and he considered the situation sluggishly for a few minutes before realizing he'd reached his destination.
Oz, open it.
And a panel in the wall slid silently to one side. Bright light poured in, blinding his frozen open eyes. He cried out harshly, both in pain and triumph. The raucous sound, like some gore crow, disturbed scavenging a battlefield. He pulled himself out into the corridor beyond, and then collapsed, steam rising thickly from his body as it hit the warm air of the corridor. Owen lay helplessly on the floor, the cold curling and uncurling inside him, like a ratchet wheel turning. But the stoked heat of his rage still burned deep within him, and it melted away the cold, inch by inch, until life returned and he could move again. His fingers were first, bending and straightening, making sharp cracking sounds like twigs trampled underfoot. Tears burned in his defrosting eyes and ran down his cheeks, leaving warm trails behind them. His body contracted and relaxed in a series of slow pulses as warmth flooded back into cold, deadened muscles. The pain was almost unbearable, but Owen welcomed it. He was coming alive again, after being among the dead. After a while, he forced himself up onto his feet and looked around for Hazel, and only then realized that she wasn't with him. She hadn't followed him out of the tunnel. He hobbled over to the opening, his knees cracking loudly.
Hazel?
She didn't answer. Owen batted at the freezing fog with his hands, trying to see into the darkness beyond, but even his eyes had their limits. He called again, but the cold and the dark swallowed up his voice in a moment. He reached inside himself, searching for the mental link that bound him to Hazel, but it eluded him, weakened by long neglect. He'd left her behind in the cold and the dark and the dead, and he had to go back in and rescue her. He took a deep breath of the freezing air and thrust his head and shoulders once again into the dark. He reached out with his hands till they jarred against frozen flesh and pulled himself back into the narrow tunnel he'd made. The bitter cold closed around him like the embrace of an old familiar enemy, but he made himself ignore it, thinking only of Hazel. He forced himself on, back among the bodies, and then his heart stopped as a cold hand closed suddenly around his wrist. His breath burst out of him in a painful gasp as he imagined the dead coming slowly to life all around him, holding him, keeping him in their frozen hell till he was dead like them. And then his heart pounded again as he realized the hand was Hazel's. He grabbed her wrist, tried to say something reassuring in his croaking voice, and scrabbled frantically backwards, pulling her with him. It only took a few moments before he was out in the corridor again, steam rising from his cooled body as he dragged Hazel out into the light and warmth. She came out in a series of sudden jerks, unable to help him, her body frozen rigid. Her eyes were frozen shut, and her face had locked into a defiant snarl, teeth gritted together. Her skin was blue. Owen knelt beside her, chafing her hands in his. Her body would throw off the cold just as his had, but he needed to feel he was doing something to help. Steam rose thickly from her solid clothes. Her hair was thick with hoarfrost, but it soon melted and ran away in the warm air of the corridor. Slowly, Hazel's body relaxed until she was nestling against him, murmuring his name. Although she would never admit it, Hazel had always felt safe and comforted in Owen's arms. Finally, she sat up and pushed him away, and he knew she was back to her old self. She shook her head as though trying to clear cobwebs from her thoughts.
I lost my way. The tunnel was a straight line, but I lost myself alone in the dark, with the dead, and you came back for me.
She wrapped her arms around herself and shuddered suddenly.
Feels like I'll never be warm again. That the cold of the grave will always be with me.
It'll pass.
Of course it will. We're more than human now, remember? No longer bound by human fears and weaknesses.
Hazel?
I'm all right now. I'm fine.
Of course you are.
They got to their feet, helping each other. Owen quietly told Oz to close the panel in the wall, and the freezing air was shut off. The fog in the corridor slowly began to clear. Owen looked around him, searching for something he recognized. It had been a long time since he'd been home.
Right. Let's go and find someone we can persuade to give us a few answers about what the hell's going on here. Which way do we go, Deathstalker? Come on, this is your castle. You're standing.
Well, yes, but I don't think I actually ever came down this far. I mean, it's a big place. Lots of people worked and lived here, and I only ever got to know a few of them. Mostly I stuck to my own quarters. I certainly never bothered with the maintenance areas. I had people to do that for me.
Lifestyles of the rich and useless. No wonder your own people were able to throw you out of here so easily.
They didn't throw me out. I retreated in the face of superior numbers. Perfectly sound military strategy.
Yeah, sure. Look, are you saying you're lost?
Down the corridor and turn right. That'll lead you to Valentine's new laboratories.
Of course I'm not lost. We just go down here and turn right, and that'll take us right to Valentine's new laboratories. Bound to be someone there you can terrorize into telling us what we need to know.
Owen and Hazel set off down the corridor.
You don't appreciate me. You really don't.
How did you know where Valentine's labs are?
Educated guess. I have the castle's full schematics on file, and there were only so many open spaces we could have set up all the new tech he's supposed to have here.
What would I do without you, Oz?
I shudder to think. Now get your ass in gear before some guards come along. Valentine's never comfortable without a small army to put between him and the understandably hostile world.
Owen passed that thought on to Hazel, and they increased their pace. The exertion helped to drive the last traces of cold out of their bodies. Owen began to feel almost human again. Hazel, too, for after a while he noticed her beginning to pay more attention to their surroundings. They were worth noticing. The floor was carpeted, the rich material covered in designs so old that centuries of Deathstalker servants' feet had rubbed most of the detail away. Tapestries and portraits and hollows hung from the old stone walls, depicting lesser moments in the long Deathstalker history. The greater moments and treasures were on display on the upper levels, where they could be shown off to aristocratic guests. Or they should be. Owen frowned. There was no telling what Valentine might have done with them. He had no respect for tradition or history, or much else these days. Owen wouldn't put it past Valentine to heap all the Deathstalker treasures in one great pile and then set fire to it, just for the fun of dancing around it. And for the thought of what it would do to Owen when he found out. Owen walked a little faster, adding this wrong to so many others. Owen kept all his anger carefully tamped down, far enough inside not to interfere with his mission, but ready to burst free when he finally came face to face with the villain Wolf. And then there would be a reckoning. Owen followed Oz's murmured directions till he and Hazel came to a sudden halt, their way blocked by a door that looked distinctly out of place in the old-world luxurious surroundings. It was a solid steel door, blunt and functional, with a state-of-the-art and then some lock. Hazel immediately moved in close, studying the lock with almost hungry intensity. Hazel and Lox were old friends. Or enemies, depending on how you looked at it. Owen put his ear to the cold steel and listened carefully. After a while, he was able to make out the measured, repetitious sounds of grinding machinery and the hissing of gases under pressure. Owen straightened up, frowning thoughtfully. He'd kept nothing in his standing that would have sounded like that. And David hadn't installed anything either. In which case, Owen wanted very much to see for himself what it might be, what new horror the wolf had introduced into his former home. He looked down at Hazel, who was still studying the lock.
Any luck?
Yeah, all bad. I can crack this, but without my tools, we're talking half an hour at least, maybe more.
Too long.
I know that. We could always shoot the lock out.
Too noisy, even if it didn't set off a whole mess of alarms, which it probably would.
All right, what do you suggest?
Owen smiled at her, stepped forward, and kicked the door in.
Show off.
They stepped over the door and into the lab, guns in hand. But there was no one coming to meet them. The only occupant of the vast room was a technician in a grubby smock who sat before a computer terminal, the jack plugged into the back of his neck. Owen and Hazel lowered their guns. The cyber jockey was so lost in his own world, they could have shot him, and he wouldn't have noticed till he unplugged. They looked around them, trying to make sense of the mass of tech and machinery, that filled most of the laboratory. The room was huge. Owen thought vaguely that it might have been a wine cellar once. Pieces of unfamiliar machinery were bulked together in groups, taking up most of the floor space, their tops almost brushing the ceiling. None of it looked particularly subtle. The hardware was mostly of a crude mechanical construction, hence the need for a jack-in rather than using comm implants, designed for crushing and grating and sorting various materials. Owen turned slowly, tracing the path of the materials. Lengths of tubing, stapled to the stone walls, led away from the larger machines, crisscrossing in a riot of color coatings. They delivered whatever they were carrying to a complicated filtration system, which in turn steadily dripped its end result into a series of anonymous, unlabeled containers. Everything else was straightforward computer monitoring equipment, though precisely what processes it was monitoring was a mystery to Owen. Nothing was labeled, and the few control panels were basic enough to cover a multitude of potential sins. He looked across at Hazel, who shrugged, which was pretty much what he'd expected. Hazel wasn't noted for her deductive capabilities. When in doubt, ask someone. Loudly. Owen strode over to the lab technician, who was happily communing unawares with his computers, ripped the jack out of the back of his neck, spun him around in his chair, and stuck his gun up the man's nose. It took a moment for the tech to realize what was happening, dazed by his sudden exit from the computer systems, and then his eyes focused on Owen's face, and he looked even more upset if that was possible. Owen smiled nastily at him, and the tech actually whimpered. Hazel moved in from the other side and gave him her best menacing glower, and the man all but wet himself. Owen began to feel like he was bullying a puppy, but ruthlessly suppressed the thought. This was one of Valentine's people, and therefore guilty by association.
Hi there, I'm Owen Deathstalker. The nightmare made flesh to your right is Hazel Dark, and you are in deep doo-doo. Answer my questions fully and accurately, and you might just live long enough to stand trial. Not if you're with me so far.
The technician nodded as best he could with a gun up his nose. All the color had disappeared from his face the moment Owen mentioned his name, and now cold beads of sweat were popping out on his forehead. Owen was secretly gratified. He hadn't realized he was that frightening.
Who are you? And what is the purpose of all this machinery? Overview first, then the details.
I'm Pierre Trignon, my lord. Please, I'm just a little fish. I'm nobody. You want the ones who give me orders. I just do what I'm told.
Yeah, we'll get to them. Now answer the man's question. What are you doing here?
Trignon swallowed hard, lowering his eyes. He was going to lie. Owen could feel it. Owen leaned forward so that his face was right in front of his victim's. The tech tried to shrink back in his chair, but there was nowhere to go.
If you lie, I'll know it. I can always get the answers from someone else if I have to, but I guarantee you won't be around to see it.
Yes, my lord,
I'm not a lord anymore, but I'm still a Deathstalker. Now tell me everything you know, or I'll show you what that means.
This is a processing and refining plant, Sir Deathstalker. We take in the raw material, break it down into its basic chemical components, siphon off the desired residues, and store it for later transport off-planet.
But what's the raw material? And what the hell is the end product?
The Esper drug. We're manufacturing the Esper drug.
Owen and Hazel looked at each other. They'd heard about the Esper drug during their time with the Esper Underground, but its composition was supposed to be a secret. Once its endlessly addictive nature had become clear, the Underground had buried the files, just in case anyone was tempted to use it as a weapon. Still, if anyone was going to dig up a new drug, it would be Valentine. And setting up production on Viramont was a good way of keeping it secret. Parliament had only discovered his presence by accident. Owen nodded slowly. He was following the trail so far, but none of it explained why the technician should still be so scared.
What's the raw material? What are you refining the Esper drug from?
Please. Please understand. I just follow orders. They'd kill me if I didn't.
I'll kill you if you don't answer me. What's the raw material?
The dead. The dead of Viramond.
After that, it was very quiet for a long moment. Apart from the slow, steady sounds of the machinery, chewing up the latest batch of raw material. Owen's eyes squeezed shut, but he could still see what he now recognized to to be crushing and pulping hardware. He could still see his dead people, piled like logs, kept frozen until they were needed. His eyes opened again, and the technician took one look at the cold rage building in them and began talking very quickly, almost babbling, as though relieved finally to be able to tell somebody.
The Lord Wolf came here because there were so many bodies just waiting to be harvested. The Esper drug has always been derived from human tissues, just as the S-blockers come from dead Esper brain tissues. But you need a lot of the basic material to produce just a small amount of the end product. That's why the Esper drug has always been so rare, so secret. The Lord Wolf saw an opportunity for mass production here and took advantage of it. He's processed hundreds of thousands of the dead and produced more of the drug and in a purer form than was ever possible before. It's really quite a simple process once it's been set up. There's just me and a handful of others to keep an eye on things, please. I'm nobody. I just did as I was told.
You have been overseeing the destruction of my people to produce a drug so addictive it enslaves all who use it. I have seen horror in my time, in many wars on many battlefields. I have waded through blood and awful, killed till my arms ached, and seen the slaughter of the good and the bad. But never have I encountered anything as cold-blooded as this. The grinding down of the dead, to produce a poison for the living. Turning humanity itself into a product. Oh, my people. My people.
He turned away, his shoulders heaving, and Hazel went after him. Trignon saw his chance and made a run for the door. Owen Deathstalker looked around, tears in his eyes, and shot the man in the back. The energy beam punched a hole through Trignon's back and out of his chest, slamming him against the doorframe. He clung there for a moment, already dead, and then crumpled slowly to the floor. Owen shook his head slowly back and forth, as though trying to deny what he'd been told. Hazel moved to his side, but he waved her away. There wasn't room in him for anything but horror and sorrow, and a rage to strike back at the cause of his pain.
I shouldn't have shot him. It wasn't worthy of me.
He was as guilty as all the others.
Yes, but that wasn't why I killed him. I did it because I needed to hurt someone, punish someone apart from myself. They were my people. I should have been here to protect them.
Oh, let it go, Owen. You were outlawed, banished. Get over it. Everyone here turned their backs on you.
It doesn't make any difference. They were my responsibility. Oz.
Yes, Owen?
Shut this obscenity down. All of it. Whatever it takes.
Yes, Owen.
Hazel, let's go and find Valentine and his cronies. And kill them all.
The head of Valentine Wolf's security people appeared, somewhat nervously, on the view screen in the Great Hall to alert Valentine that, in order, two strangers had somehow appeared in the Flyer Caves under the Standing, been identified as the legendary Owen Deathstalker and the infamous Hazel Dark. They had then somehow made their way into the castle proper, despite all the security safeguards, and could be, well, anywhere right now. You could have heard a pin drop in the hall once the man had stopped speaking. In fact, you could have heard the pin while it was still in midair. The Silvestri dropped one of his daggers. The Romanov went very pale. And the Kartakis's last swallow of wine went down the wrong way and half choked him. Valentine Wolf ignored the unpleasant sounds and concentrated on the unhappy security chief on the view screen.
Are you telling me that all of our wide-ranging and incredibly expensive security measures, including booby traps, hidden guns, and an army of ruthless killers, couldn't stop two people from breaking in?
Well, basically, yes, my lord, after all, the two people in question are...
I know who they are. That's why I hired you and your people. And just from looking at you, I can tell there's more bad news. What is it?
Some outside system has penetrated our computers and is shutting down the processing plant.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't think I am, but I seem to remember you telling me that such a thing was completely and utterly impossible.
Yes, my lord. Strictly speaking, it is impossible. It shouldn't be happening.
But it is.
Yes, my lord.
You're fired. Collect your severance pay and have your second-in-command nail your head to a chair before you leave. And no, you don't get a reference. At least, not one you'd want to show anybody.
You should have had him killed.
Oh, don't be silly, Carlos. Mercenaries have a very strong union. Dear Owen, how did you know to find me here? I covered my trail extremely thoroughly. But no, here you are again, turning up like the proverbial bad penny to ruin my day yet again. You always want to spoil my fun. Still, I hope you appreciate my little act of vengeance. After all, every dramatic gesture really needs an audience to appreciate it.
The Silvestri pulled his other dagger from a portrait's eye, ripping the ancient canvas.
I'm not afraid of the big bad Death Stalker. Those stories about him are just stories. Let him come. Him and his bitch.
The Romanov shrugged the priceless tapestry from around his shoulders and frowned thoughtfully.
You might not have enough sense to be scared of the Death Stalker, but I have. He's a dangerous man. He really did do most of the things he's supposed to have done, even the ones that sound impossible. But unlike the rest of you, I had a feeling our security forces weren't up to stopping or even slowing down a living legend, if he did get wind of our operation. So I made my own arrangements. A little surprise, especially for the Death Stalker. Now, if you'll excuse me, or even if you won't, I'll go back and unpack it. Try to keep Owen occupied till I get back.
He strode out with his head held high.
Ooh! Surprises! I do so love surprises! As it happens, I have one or two prepared for dear Owen myself.
It had better involve extreme violence and sudden death, or we're all in real trouble. The Deathstalker is not going to be pleased when he discovers what we've made of his old home.
I'm not afraid of him.
Yes, well, that's because you're a complete bloody headcase. In our line of work, that's usually an advantage, but we can't afford indulgences like insanity right now. We have to think, come up with a plan. We have men and resources. At least the Deathstalker didn't bring an army with him to back him up.
He doesn't need an army. He's got Hazel Dark.
You're being remarkably calm about all this. Do you know something we don't? Or have you been popping a few extra pills today?
I have a plan. A very unpleasant plan, perfectly tailored to take advantage of Owen's weaknesses. All you have to do is keep the Dark Woman occupied. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must be about setting my plan in motion. Oh, it's going to be such fun watching him suffer.
He got up, bowed elegantly, and left, strolling casually away as though he didn't have a care in the world. The two aristocrats looked after him.
That man is not living in the same reality as the rest of us.
His plan probably involves cutting his losses, abandoning us, and heading for the far horizon like a bat with its arse on fire. If we're going to survive this, we're going to have to do it ourselves. We can stop them. We just have to prepare something to get them off balance.
I'm not afraid of them.
Will you stop saying that? You're not fooling anyone.
Least of all me.
The two aristocrats spun around, and there he was, standing tall and intimidating in the doorway, a sword in his hand, like it belonged there and always had. His face was grave, his eyes were cold and unwavering, and he looked every inch the legend that he was. Hazel Dark was at his side, leaning casually on the doorframe, a large projectile gun in her hand. Just looking at the two of them, Athos Kartakis felt his blood run cold. He could see the calm certainty of partnership between them, of warriors practiced in their bloody craft and sworn to stand together till death or beyond. The Kartakis had fought so many duels he'd lost count, stared death in the face and spat in its bony eye socket, but he'd never really felt in terror of his life before now. He swallowed hard. He had a disruptor under his robes, but knew he'd be dead if he went to draw it, unless he could come up with a distraction.
Well, Silvestri, you always said you could take the Death Stalker. Feel free to prove it.
Owen looked at the Silvestri with interest. Stunned by the betrayal, the aristocrat shot a glance at the Kartakis and then faced Owen steadily.
You don't scare me, Death Stalker. I've heard about your inhuman powers, but to me, they sound just like something a coward would hide behind. How about it, Owen? Have you got the guts to fight me as a man, not a monster? Because I can take you man to man, steel to steel. And deep down, you know it.
Oh, now he really is full of it. Say the word, Owen, and I'll shoot his eyes out.
No, I could use a little entertainment. Don't try and interfere. Hazel wouldn't like it.
Wouldn't dream of it.
There was no doubting the Cartacus's sincerity. He backed away, keeping both hands in clear sight, thinking hard. Owen moved slowly forward into the great hall. He looked unhurriedly about him, taking in the various damages that had been done to his fixtures and fittings. He didn't look angry or even upset. He'd gone beyond that. He looked just a little colder and even more dangerous. Carlos Silvestri came forward to meet him, moving lightly on the balls of his feet, a slender knife in each hand. Imminent action had driven all fear and uncertainty out of him, and his gaze and his hands were both rock steady. In his own way, he looked dangerous too, but it was nothing compared to the cold implacability of the Death Stalker, and everyone knew it. The Silvestri was a trained fighter and a vicious killer, but the Death Stalker was a warrior, tempered in some of the most deadly conflicts the Empire had ever known. The two men came together to fight in the middle of the hall, and those who watched them knew how it was going to end. They circled each other unhurriedly, blades at the ready for any hint of an opening in the other's defenses. The Cartacus studied them both carefully. There was always the chance he might learn something to his advantage. Theoretically, it was more or less an even fight. Knives were excellent for close fighting, but had no reach. Unless you threw them and risked disarming yourself. The sword, on the other hand, had plenty of reach, but at this range, the long blade could not be wielded anywhere near as quickly as a knife. So the Silvestri had to find a way past the sword to make his attacks, while the Deathstalker had to keep his opponent at a safe distance. A knife thrown from one or a full extension lunge from the other could change everything, but a failed attempt by either man would mean almost certain death. So they circled each other with gliding, deliberate steps, shifting their weight cautiously as they watched each other's eyes. The Silvestri launched the first attack, his right hand moving almost too quickly for the human eye to follow. Owen parried the blade and then had to jump back as the left hand came swinging in from nowhere with vicious speed and purpose, heading for Owen's undefended gut. The flashing blade missed Owen's stomach by a fraction of an inch. Owen brought his sword around in a swift backhand sweep that clipped Silvestri's head as he ducked at the last moment. And then they were circling again, calm and collected and deadly. The Silvestri feinted with his right hand, waited until Owen had committed himself to the counter, and then his left hand snapped forward, throwing the knife at Owen's right eye. Owen's sword was too low to deflect the knife, and both of them knew it. The Silvestri's eyes widened in triumph. And then Owen's golden Hayden Man hand came up to intercept the knife's flight and knock it to one side. The knife chunked harmlessly into the tabletop, and while the Silvestri was caught momentarily off balance, Owen swung his blade with all his strength behind it and sheared clean through his opponent's neck. The head fell to the ground and rolled away across the floor to bump against the Cartacus's feet.
Ooh.
The head stared up at him with silent reproach. The eyes and the jaw were still moving, but they soon stopped. The body stumbled forward a few steps, blood gouting from the neck. Then it crumpled to the floor, twitching and shuddering, and then was still.
Feel better now?
Some.
Owen wasn't even breathing hard. And that was when Peter Romanov made his entrance, amid a loud hum of straining servo motors. Everyone turned to look as he stopped and posed in the doorway. He was wearing a massive exoskeleton, its metal bones surrounding and supporting him, while rectangular force fields buzzed angrily on both forearms. Owen had seen such things before, usually on dock workers at starports, unloading a heavy cargo. Due to their great weight, they burned up a lot of energy quickly, so they'd never been practical for the battlefield, but Owen had to admit it made a pretty good short-term answer to people like him and Hazel. The force shields would deflect disruptor beams, while their more than razor-sharp edges would make nasty weapons, and the servo-motor-driven steel bones would make their occupant inhumanly fast and strong.
Come to me, monsters. I am your equal now. I am faster than any human muscle can drive a man, and my strength is as the strength of 10, because my tech is pure. I will rip your arms from their sockets, tear your heads from your shoulders, and my dogs shall feast on your entrails.
Owen was still trying to come up with a suitably elegant answer that didn't involve four-letter words when Hazel stepped forward.
My turn. You're not hogging all the fun, Deathstalker.
Be my guest.
Hazel strode over to the waiting Romanoff and stopped a careful distance just outside his arm's reach. Other Hazels flickered in and out of existence around her, but she pushed them firmly away. She wanted to do this herself. She had had a really amusing idea, and she had no intention of sharing the fun with anyone else, even other versions of herself. She holstered her projectile weapons and smiled nastily at the Romanoff, who stirred uneasily. Whatever response he'd expected, being faced with bare hands and blatant self-confidence, certainly wasn't one of them. Unhurried, Hazel reached out to the abandoned meals on the table beside her and picked up a ripe piece of fruit. She crushed it in her hand so that thick pulp and juice leaked through her fingers. And then she threw the sticky mess at the Romanoff. Her arm snapped forward with more than human force and speed, and the fruit shot past his defenses before he could even raise his shielded arms. It struck home with perfect accuracy, right at the heart of the exposed servo motors on the Romanoff's left arm, and made a wonderful mess of the gears. The Romanoff yelled in outrage and surged forward, moving horribly quickly for someone of his size and weight. Hazel hopped up onto the table and darted back out of reach of his arms. She snatched up more of the abandoned food, crushed it in her hands, and threw it with devastating accuracy. The Romanoff whirled his force shields desperately back and forth, but it was no match for her speed and reflexes. More of his servo motors failed him. The Romanoff grabbed the heavy table with both hands and overturned it with one swift movement. Hazel launched herself from the table, tucked into a somersault in midair, and landed on the Romanoff's shoulders. Her legs wrapped around his neck and squeezed. His face went bright red, and he couldn't get his breath. He started to raise his hands to tear her from him, but Hazel grabbed his exposed head in a vice-like grip.
Let us understand each other. You annoy me, and I am going to rip your head off your shoulders. And your servo motors are so gummed up now that you haven't a hope in hell of getting to me before I do it. Clear?
The Romanoff considered the matter. Above the buzzing of his force shields, he could clearly hear more motors shorting out, and he was going to have to breathe really soon now. He shut down his force shields and smiled hopefully at Owen.
I'd really like to surrender now. Please.
Hazel grinned triumphantly and loosed her hold a little. She looked across at Owen.
Up to you, Deathstalker. If you need to kill him, he's all yours.
Oh, hell. Let's take him back for trial. He's too pathetic to kill. I just want Valentine.
In which case, I'd really like to offer my surrender to.
The Kartakis carefully unbuckled his sword belt and let it drop to the floor. He then removed his disruptor from its hidden holster with thumb and forefinger and let that fall too. Hazel nodded briefly.
All right. Get over here with Lord Seizup and don't make a move unless I say otherwise.
I wouldn't dare.
Hazel released her leg hold on the Romanoff's neck and clambered down from his shoulders. He began to breathe again and remained very still as Hazel stood before him, glaring ominously. In the end, she just sniffed and settled for ripping the servo motors out of his exoskeleton with her bare hands and crushing them like she'd crushed the fruit. The Romanoff swallowed hard. Owen waited till Hazel was finished, and then fixed the two aristocrats with a cold, unsettling gaze.
Where can I find Valentine Wolfe?
He left just before you got here. Said he had a surprise to arrange for you. Didn't say what, and we didn't ask. One doesn't with Valentine Wolfe.
I've got him. I'm still tapped into the standing security systems. Valentine is currently at Security Central, running a very strange set of programs on the computers. But don't ask me what they are. I can't say I've ever seen anything like them.
It doesn't matter what he's got. I'm going to kill him anyway. Hazel, you stay here and guard these two. Ours has got a lock on Valentine.
Hold everything. I don't want you running around this place on your own. We're partners, remember?
I know, but I need to do this myself.
Understood. But don't take too long or I'll come looking for you.
Very well. Watch these two carefully. You can't trust them.
Of course not. They're lords.
They exchanged a smile, and then Owen turned and left. Hazel sauntered over to the upturned table, fished through the dumped food, and came up with something she was almost sure was chicken. She gnawed at it cheerfully, disregarding the grease that ran down her chin. The Kartakis moved just a little closer to the weapons he dropped, and then stopped as Hazel fixed him with a glittering eye.
Feel free to start something, my lords. I'll feel free to think up something even more amusing to do to you.
The two lords looked at each other and kept very still. Owen made his way quickly through empty stone corridors, heading implacably towards what had once been his security center. He was prepared to cut down without mercy any man who got in his way or tried to hinder him, but he encountered no one, which was strange. Valentine had made too many enemies in his time, so where were the guards? Owen slowed just a little as he considered the matter. So far, the only people he and Hazel had come across in the standing were a few guards, two aristocrats, and a single lab technician. Where was everyone? And just what unpleasant surprise was Valentine planning for him? Owen scowled, increasing his pace. He didn't like mysteries. He just needed to see Valentine lying dead and bloody at his feet. For what the wolf had done to his people, his planet, and his home, he had to pay. He would pay. Owen might not have been able to save his people, but he could still avenge them. At last, he came to the single steel door that led to what had once been his security center. He stopped before the door, glaring at it, barely out of breath. He reined back on his anger and his need, and made himself study the door carefully. It was solid steel, inches thick, with no visible lock mechanism, and was undoubtedly booby-trapped in a dozen ways, from hidden disruptors to primed explosives. It was what Owen would have done, but Owen didn't care. He concentrated, reaching down past his conscious mind into the back brain, the undermind, and something there woke up and uncoiled. The hidden disruptors and explosives tried to arm themselves, but Owen shut them down with a single thought. His power was fully awake now and burning brightly within him. Owen stepped through the empty doorway into the room. At the far end of the room, almost in shadow, Valentine Wolf was sitting languidly in a swivel chair. Dressed still in deepest black, his corpse-pale face seemed to float unsupported on the gloom.
Marvelous entrance, Owen. You really have developed a sense of the dramatic. Such an improvement. You were always so proper and stuffy before you were outlawed. Really, it's been the making of you.
Owen moved forward a few steps, looking carefully about him. Lots of computers and monitor screens and terminals, but no operators and no guards. Just Valentine, apparently unmoved. Nothing and no one to stand between the Death Stalker and his vengeance.
Get up, Wolf. It's all over. It ends here.
Oh, don't be so predictable, Owen. Do we really have to do what everyone expects of us? Act out the traditional roles of pure-hearted hero and dastardly villain. There's more to us than that. We have so much in common, you and I. We ought almost to be brothers in spirit.
I'm nothing like you, Wolf.
Really? What have I done that you haven't in your time as a rebel? I've no doubt your personal body count is much higher than mine, for all my efforts.
You were responsible for the death of this planet, for the wiping out of its population.
Well, I had help. But how many died at your instigation on Mistworld and Golgotha? How many good soldiers, just following orders and carrying out their duty, who knew nothing of politics and were just enforcing the law? We are more alike than you realize, Deathstalker. Or more than you'd like to admit. There's blood and death and horror on both our hands. But don't let it worry you. We're above such things. We've made extraordinary beings of ourselves. We're more than human now, and human limitations don't apply to us any longer.
It's not what we've done, it's why we did it. I killed when it was necessary, fought to see an end of killing. You did it for pleasure.
Are you saying you won't enjoy killing me?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
You see, we have become great men, you and I. People watch our deeds and wonder. We can do awesome, terrible things, limited only by our imagination and the narrowness of our vision. We will do these things. We must, because we can. Don't stay mired in the past, Owen, in the man you used to be before you were kicked awake. You're still concerned with small concepts like duty and honor and law. Law is for the little people, honor for those afraid to be more than they are, and our only duty is to ourselves now. To explore the possibilities before us, to become everything that we can be. Anything less is a betrayal of what we've made of ourselves.
I've lost so much, I'd give up so many things. I won't give up my humanity, too.
Trust me, Owen, it's really such a small thing. You'll be surprised how little you miss it. But I see there's no point in talking anymore. You're not ready to hear the truth. When you've progressed as far as I have, you'll see things much more clearly. Still, I had to try. I see so much of myself in you. Now, I really must be leaving.
I don't think so. If I remember correctly, and I do, there's only one way in or out of this center, and I'm blocking it. You have to get past me first, and you are never that good.
Probably not, but I don't have to be. I've always relied on others to do the hard menial work for me. I am a lord, after all. I have someone here who'd like to see you, Deathstalker. Really, she's quite been looking forward to it. You went away and left her, and I'm afraid she carries something of a grudge. You never were very good with women, Owen.
The wolf looked off through an open door that led into an adjoining room.
Do step in here and make yourself known, my dear.
From the next room came the sound of slow, stumbling footsteps. Owen's nose wrinkled as a smell came to him, dark and organic, quite out of place in the spotless high-tech security center. It was a smell of preservatives, and underneath that, like the face beneath a mask, the sickly sweet stench of rot and decay. A cold prickling ran down Owen's spine, a premonition of some horror he felt he ought to recognize. And then the dead woman stepped into the room and stood trembling beside Valentine Wolf. She was quite naked and held a sword in her hand. She'd been in the ground for some time. The primitive undertakers of Viramont had done their best, but the pale purple and gray skin had cracked apart all over the body, revealing implanted computers and servo mechanisms. The big Y of an autopsy scar ran from her sunken breasts down to her groin, the stitches stretched and broken. A single death wound still showed clearly against the ribs. The face was taut and drawn, sunken down to the bone in places. The dead lips had torn free of their stitches and drew back from perfect teeth in an unwavering smile that held no humor. The eyes were sunk deep in their sockets, as yellow as urine, and the flat blonde hair had grown longer in the grave. But Owen still recognized her, knew who she had to be, and the realization closed around his heart like a fist.
Kathy. That's right, Deathstalker. Your old mistress, Kathy DeVries, from the days when you were young and carefree and just a humble scholar here on Viramond. Actually, she was really an Imperial spy, sent to keep an eye on you. She tried to kill you when you were first outlawed, and you had to kill her in self-defense. Your first love who died in your arms. Such a touching scene, I'm sure. And here she is again, my little present to you. You see, I've done my homework on you, Owen. I know what moves you and what holds you back. I had dear Kathy dug up when I first came here, had my people implant ghost warrior technology inside her. Just in case you dragged me here to trouble me again. Now, I think I'll leave you two lovebirds alone together. I'm sure you've got lots to talk about. And Owen, just in case you do bring yourself to kill her again before she kills you, I've arranged another little surprise for you. The program's already running. No, don't bother to thank me. What are brothers for?
He gestured at the dead woman, and she lurched forward, sword at the ready. Owen backed away, and the corpse of what had once been his mistress came after him. He tried to speak to her, but his mouth was dry. He knew she couldn't hear him anyway. This wasn't Kathy. Kathy was dead, and the computers currently inhabiting her body cared only for the orders programmed into them. Owen knew this, but deep down in his heart, didn't believe it. He couldn't fight her. Not her. Killing Kathy had been the hardest thing he'd ever had to do back then, and he didn't think he could do it again. He allowed her to back him away from the open door, and Valentine Wolf slipped easily past them. He darted away down the corridor, still laughing, leaving Owen and what was left of his old mistress to sort out their differences together. And in the computers of the security center, a program was slowly counting down to zero. Valentine's last gift to the Deathstalker. Back in the main hall, Hazel Dark was bored. She sat in a chair with its back to the wall, so no one could sneak up on her, and watched the Romanoff and the Kartakis sitting quietly together. They didn't seem to have anything left to say for themselves. The great hall was empty and silent, and there was no sound from the corridors outside. Hazel could have contacted Owen through his comm implant to see how he was getting on, but she knew how snappy he could get if you interrupted him while he was in the middle of something. Hazel crossed her legs just for something to do, and wished that Owen would get on with killing the wolf. There was always the chance he'd go all soft-hearted again at the last minute and insist on dragging the wolf back alive to stand trial, but she didn't think so. Not this time. Valentine had struck at too many of the things Owen still cared about. The wolf wouldn't be able to talk his way out of this one. Hazel recrossed her legs and sighed heavily. Boring, boring, boring. She glared across at the two silent aristocrats and only then realized that the Romanoff had disappeared. His exoskeleton was still sitting where it had been, but he was no longer inside it. Hazel was immediately on her feet, gun and sword in hand, eyes sweeping the great hall. There was no sign of the aristocrat anywhere. How the hell could she have missed the Romanoff getting loose? There was no way he could have clambered out of that much armor without her noticing, no matter how preoccupied she'd been with her boredom. Unless the suit had built-in stealth technology, in which case the Romanoff could have freed himself while hidden behind a projected holo illusion. And if the Romanoff had dropped that illusion, it could only be because he was currently skulking somewhere in the hall, behind some projected holo disguise that rendered him, for all practical purposes, invisible. Wonderful. Hazel held her sword out before her and spun in a circle, knowing she couldn't hope to spot a weakness in the hollow, but trying anyway. She strained her ears for the slightest sound, but heard not a single noise. The Romanoff could be anywhere in the damned hall. She shot a quick glare at Kartakis to warn him to stay put, and was cheered inwardly by the way he immediately sank back in his chair. And then the arm shot around her throat from behind, tightening its grip, shutting off her air. She struggled furiously against the chokehold, but couldn't shake the Romanoff off. Strength wasn't enough to break a hold like this. The arm pressed tightly against the carotid arteries in her neck, trying to stem the flow of blood to her brain. It was one of the few holds that actually stood a chance against someone as strong as she. Hazel staggered back and forth, dragging the Romanoff with her, desperate for air, enraged with herself for letting her attention slip. She had to defeat the Romanoff before Owen got back, or she'd never hear the end of it. Inspired, she snapped smartly forward at the waist, and the Romanoff went flying over her head. She heard him hit the floor hard, and immediately turned and blasted the exoskeleton with her disruptor. The Kartakis yelped and tried to shift himself a safe distance away from it, but had the sense not to try anything else. The Romanoff's holo illusion snapped off, and there he was before her, rising to his feet with a short but nasty-looking knife in his hand. She really should have searched him. Hazel sucked the air back into her straining lungs, her sword held steadily out before her. The Romanoff was a big man, but she'd faced bigger, and the advantage was back on her side now. The Romanoff seemed to sense this, opened his hand, and let the knife fall to the floor. Hazel relaxed just a little. She should have known the Aristo wouldn't have the guts for anything remotely resembling a fair fight. She gestured with her sword for the Romanoff to go and sit down again, and knew immediately that she'd made a mistake. A man who had one hidden weapon might well have another. The moment Hazel's blade moved away from him, the Romanoff flexed his arm and a knife dropped down into his hand from another concealed sheath. The knife in his hand streaked towards her undefended gut, and her sword was miles out of line. It was a sudden, simple, blindingly fast attack, and anyone else would surely have died. But Hazel wasn't like anyone else, and hadn't been for a long time now. She whipped her sword back into line with inhuman speed and strength, parried the knife, and knocked it aside, and the Romanoff plunged on, unable to stop, and impaled himself on the waiting blade. The Romanoff sank to the floor, face twisting, and dropped his knife to clutch at the transfixing sword blade with both hands, as though he could somehow pull the killing steel out of his body and still survive. It was as he held Hazel's sword with a man's desperate strength that Hazel realized she'd lost track of the Kartakis. She glared around her, pulled desperately at her sword, but couldn't budge it. There was the Kartakis on his feet, a knife in his hand too. She started to raise her gun, but the Kartakus's hand shot forward, throwing the knife with deadly practiced skill, and Hazel knew she wasn't fast enough to dodge it. She tried anyway, and time seemed to slow to a crawl. The knife inched through the air, heading straight for her left eye. Hazel knew she was going to die, alone and far from friends and help.
Oh, Owen, I wish...
And then, there he was, materializing out of thin air, his hand flicking the knife aside. It flashed through the air, back to its owner, and sank to its hilt in the Kartakus's throat as though it belonged there. The aristocrat bent slowly forward as though bowing to Owen and Hazel, and fell dead to the floor. Romanoff breathed his last, let go of Hazel's sword, and fell backwards. She jerked the sword out of his body and turned, just a little breathlessly, to thank Owen for his last-minute rescue. She gasped as she caught sight of him. How different he looked. His clothes were torn and bloodied, and topped with a great furred cloak. His face was tired and gaunt, and he was breathing hard and deep, as though he'd been running for a long time. He looked as if he'd been through hell, and had to fight every step of the way. But in his steady gaze, Hazel saw both determination and a desperate, bone-deep sadness. He smiled at her, a strange, gentle smile, and reached out a hand as though to take hers. Hazel thrust her gun into its holster and reached out to meet his grasp. And then she realized Owen was extending his left hand, and that it was flesh and blood, not the golden Haydenman hand that had replaced it long ago. Hazel hesitated, her hand stopping short of his, and Owen smiled sadly, as though he knew he'd be denied, but had still hoped otherwise. He opened his mouth to say something, and Hazel found herself straining forward, somehow knowing that it was vital she hear what he had to say, but in a moment he was gone, banished back to wherever he'd come from, to whatever desperate fight he'd interrupted, to save her when no one else could. Hazel looked about her, but the hall was empty now, save for the two dead aristocrats and the smoldering exoskeleton.